The Footsteps of the Hermit with Larry Torres. The hermit learns the truth about La Tulis. Doña Tulis, repeated Giovanni. I've heard of her. You'd have to be blind and deaf not to know who La Tulis was, continued Kika. She controlled more of this area from her boudoir than Governor Armijo did from the Palace of the Governors. Well, just how did she get so powerful? Asked the hermit, waiting patiently while Kika adjusted her gartered stocking. She wasn't always powerful, she said. She first came to Taos when she was only 16 years old. Her parents were ordinary Mexican laborers who couldn't support their own family. She and her brother hid out in some covered wagon that was en route to Taos. She was born right at the turn of the century, in the year 1800. Just like me, said Giovanni to himself, thinking of the years since he was born, way up to how his life had changed up to now. His own world had been altered radically, and he couldn't have surmised back in his village in Italy that one day he would be sitting in Taos, clear across the world, having a conversation with a soiled dove. La Tulis began her life here in Taos just as I did, she continued. She was at the mercy of men who thought to use her, not realizing that she had more brains and ambition than any woman was supposed to have. Unaware of her sharp eyes and skill with her hands, they taught her how to play cards. She learned to excel at a game called El Monte. Soon she was beating the men at their own game. She could figure out which copas and bastos, oros or espadas had already gone out, and how much money she could wager safely against them, depending on the cards that were left. The hermit smiled at the idea that Doña Tulis had made a reputation for herself based on her brains. Illustrious women were rare in all parts of the world, but here it was especially true. He was reminded of the old Italian adage that said that men had the strength, but women have the power. It was turning out to prove accurate. His attention was brought back to what Kika was saying. La Tulis, she said, was proud of the fact that she could think faster than any man. Sometimes she would mock the men by wearing their own money right under the lace of the garter on her leg. It would really stick in their craw that they had been duped by one that they considered a mere object made for their own pleasure. They thought that she wore their money with too much vanity. Vaniando el dinero, they called it. But she didn't care, she went on. In due time, she didn't have to let herself be used anymore. She hired a string of girls just like me to help her out in the back rooms. She herself stayed in the front parlor and fleeced them for everything. If they didn't have any money, well, she was willing to take land or horses, and she was very good to us. She had us keep our ears open to what men were saying in the heat of passion. We reported it back to her, and in the due course of time, she knew a lot more about local politics and how to get what she really needed. That's when she decided to move to Santa Fe and established herself at Burro Alley. The only real burros were the men who came there to pit themselves against her. Was there no special man in her life? Asked Giovanni, slowly gazing down at his calloused feet. Did anyone ever make her happy? Well, yes, there was one, replied Kika. You have to remember that just before the time that you got to New Mexico, we were still owned by Mexico. The last of the Mexican governors was Don Manuel Armijo. He was good to La Tulis, often confiding to her his hopes and ambitions for this land. He was wary of the Texans who were infringing more and more into this land. Sometimes he just needed a confidant. But Tulis needed more, she said. She needed the love of the masses of the people and the love of a special man. Was there such a man? Asked the hermit. Yes, she replied. His name was David. But his troops used to call him Colonel Mitchell. You have been walking in the footsteps of the hermit with Larry Torres. Adios.